Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
The issue was a matter of speaking loud enough in the back. It's no issue. We who take part in the program welcome any advice we hear if we are not talking aloud. Smile, always smile. And as I said, everyone hears me clearly. The aim and the purpose, the real aim and the purpose of our being here is to spread broadcast the teachings of Theosophy, as recorded in the writings of H.P. Blavatsky and William Q. Judge. On the back of this wonderful little pamphlet, it states that the policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of Theosophy, without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of Theosophy, and the exemplification in practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among Theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim and purpose and teaching, therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers. The sole bond between its associates being that basis, and it aims to disseminate this idea among Theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as Theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity, without distinction of race or creed or sex, condition, or organization, and it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. The true Theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. Being in sympathy, you will find those on the platform and elsewhere, the ushers and so forth, do so independently out of that sympathy. Being understood that such association calls for no obligation on my part other than that which I myself determine. And briefly then, this morning is Sunday. So the Sunday class began at 11 o'clock, it'll be over at noon. The doors open at 10:30, and we wait in the audience until the particular program begins. Now on Wednesday, we're studying In the Ocean of Theosophy by WQJ, and everybody's welcome to these classes. The class begins at 7:30 and is over at 8:30. Now you can come in early at 5:15 until 7:15 and go to the library. It's a reference library, and you will find a volunteer there to help you become accustomed to what you will find in that library. We've covered the most important part of this wonderful little pamphlet. Pick up one before you leave. As is our custom, when we begin on Sunday morning, or even on Wednesday, there's a reading that we can give to you to prepare you for the subject. This little reading is from The Voice of the Silence. Interesting topic. To wit, to live to benefit mankind is the first step. To practice the six glorious virtues is the second. To don Nirmanakaya's humble robe is to forego eternal bliss for self, to help one man's salvation. To reach Nirvana's bliss but to renounce it is the supreme, the final step, the highest on renunciation's path. Know, O disciple, this is the secret path selected by the Buddhas of perfection who sacrificed the self to weaker selves. Yet if the doctrine of the heart is too high wing for thee, if thou needest help thyself and fearest to offer help to others, then thou of timid heart, be warned in time, remain content with the I doctrine of the law, hope still. For if the secret path is unattainable this day, it is within thy reach tomorrow. Learn that no efforts, not the smallest, whether in right or wrong direction, can vanish from the world of causes. Even wasted smoke remains not traceless. A harsh word uttered in the past life is not destroyed, but ever comes again. The pepper plant will not give birth to roses, nor the sweet jessamine, silver star, to thorn or thistle turn. Thou canst create this day, thy chances for thy morrow, in the great journey. Causes sown each hour, bear each its harvest of effects. For rigid justice rules the world. With mighty sweep of never-erring action, it brings to mortals lives of weal or woe, the karmic progeny of all our former thoughts and deeds. Take then as much as merit hath in store for thee, O thou of patient heart. Be of good cheer, and rest content with faith. Such is thy karma, the karma of the cycle of thy births, the destiny of those who in their pain and sorrow are born along with thee. Rejoice and weep from life to life chained to thy previous actions.
Well, good morning. This morning we have an interesting topic. It's a topic that surely all of us present have read something or much about, reincarnation. But in particular, we're going to take a look at reincarnation as a foundation for hope. As a foundation for hope. Well, let's consider if... It's probably not too uncommon to think that hope requires a foundation, but if it does, then for those who are either not familiar with the idea of reincarnation or who outright reject the idea, well, what's the foundation for hope for them? Them being many of our family, many of our friends, many of folks all around us. When talking about this to someone, we would emphasize, of course, you know, when someone's in despair in the middle of a crisis, the last thing they need is a theosophist talking to them about reincarnation. So it's appropriate. When people are, you know, not during the crisis stage, but when they're seeking, when they're trying to figure out, that's a time to offer ideas for consideration, not to lecture or et cetera, et cetera. But what are some of the things that our friends would need to consider if they were going to give reincarnation this much credit as a foundation for hope? Well, some of the things that they would have to do to start is to reconsider what the theosophists would call the superstitions regarding life after death. those superstitions have to do with, as we all know, eternal bliss or eternal condemnation in the Western religions. And in Eastern religions, equally false, though they do understand and are familiar with the doctrine of reincarnation, but the doctrine of reincarnation abused to threaten or put fear in the ignorant in the East by telling them that they'll come back as a rat or a grasshopper if they don't follow certain rules is just as superstitious as the belief in the absolute condemnation of soul. So that's one of the things. Let's just take that and temporarily put that to the side. Then we also have to take some recognition about certain truths about ourselves that to the Theosophists is common and to others is kind of half common, such as the immortality of the soul. Now, many folks around us, when they talk about the immortality of the soul, that immortality is from my birthday forever, which really doesn't make sense. Because if the soul is soul and is immortal, then that immortality is forever. And so the soul in that sense always was and always will be. So this life that we live in this physical body is one among many that we use, physical bodies that we use to experience and grow. So the purpose for coming into this incarnation is simply to realize within 80 years of how to live right, as opposed to, and how to grow through it and with it, as opposed to thinking it is the be-all and end-all forever, setting a path forever. Now, of course, in all religions around the world, one of the things all religions, let's bear in mind, do have is that life after death, whatever that may be, whatever any religion may call it, the condition of life after death is affected by how we live this life. There's something to be said for that, that all the religions recognize that. So another thing that we would encourage our friends to do is to stop trying to figure it out, stop trying to think logically of this one question, the title of that book, Why Do Bad Things Happen to Good People? Hold on. If bad things happen to good people and good things happen to bad people and it never makes sense, then perhaps your foundation for how you think needs to be tested and questioned and alternatives need to be sought. So rather than trying to make an equation out of life, trying to think that cause and effect is linear, I do this, I get that, we have to look at it more with a philosophical approach to how do I fit into my community and use the talents that I have to be of service to all and accept that when I see certain imperfect or unexpected problems, not expect to know the particular of that, of why, who did that and go fix that, but really just to recognize it's come to me. The empowering issue there is to take responsibility for what comes to us, even if we don't know the particulars of how it came to us. A philosophical approach to life is one which will prove that nothing could come to us if we didn't cause it. And that goes for the good stuff and for the challenging stuff. So false ideas is what takes us down the road to despair. The opposite of hope, despair. Asking God, a personal God, why did this happen to me? I'm a special person. I know that you know me, and I really expect you to realize my specialness because I know that I'm special. And specialness means to me, I wouldn't have gotten that divorce. Specialness means to me, I wouldn't have lost my child. Specialness means to me, I will never suffer and I will always have the right job for me. And we have this compact because I pray and I know that you tell me that things will work out, but things aren't working out. So these attitudes that really are not uncommon of having this discussion with a god, with the body of Zeus or something that really is a personal discussion is, you know, it's really a false idea about how it all works. It's a false idea about life. So really, does God screw it all up? You know, some people check out. God, I'm going to check out, and I'm going to be depressed in my bedroom until you fix this. Now, does that ever work? You know, has anybody ever seen God send a divine messenger to the person with these problems and say, you know what? We screwed up. Boy, did we blow it with you. Here's your spouse back. Here's your job back. We'll bring your child back. We're going to heal you all up. Is that okay? How do you feel about that? Is that what they're expecting? Really, that is what it seems that they're expecting. Like, God is going to change the plan of the universe for the 80 years that you're here. Everything's going to be for you. It never was before you were here. It'll never be after you're here. But while you're here, you're special because God loves you. Now, how much sense does that make? And yet, isn't that really what's underlying for many people? This idea of hope, this expectation that God will fix things, either now or when I go to heaven, right? So, the universe, we would introduce this idea to our friends that really God, our understanding of God, the nature of God, is more understandable if we consider God as an impersonal divine process, a process of law, of law and order. And the degree to which we make the effort and learn to operate within that law is somewhat very directly related to our fulfillment, to our sense of purpose, to our understanding that hope is a matter of working with the law. And as we do that, when we share these ideas of reincarnation, it becomes quite obvious that to us as immortal souls, the idea that everything has to start and end perfectly in one life because that's how special I am, it's out the door. Some things come to us. They just do in this lifetime from a previous. There are things that we're doing which affect future lifetimes, and we'll think we get away with it unless we have this idea of reincarnation. So, if we consider these ideas, if we recognize reincarnation per se is the foundation for hope, then what we're really saying is where I am right now, kind of a mess, but I don't have to rely on superstition or a God that I don't even know where he is because he's not here, he's outside there looking into the universe. Reincarnation as a foundation for hope provides us with the empowerment to take responsibility, to make the effort to move forward regardless of our challenging conditions, and know with faith, not in some God out there, but with faith in the law. We say faith in the law, but also faith in one's self to learn more and grow more, to operate in concert with the law so that he can better be able to improve his health, improve his awareness, improve in every way to be the better able to help and teach others. So the hope is always there, because the options are always there to set new causes in motion. Any challenge, or any karmic effect for that matter, has to be of the same power of the cause of that effect. The life that we live, the power that we put into each day, sets up certain causes, the effects of which will come back. They have to come back. They have to come back. Now, how many of us, or how many people who we know, really are living with certain problems? We're not where we think we could be, and when is this going to happen? And kind of subconsciously, even, because we grow up in this, subconsciously waiting for something or someone to do something for us, when actually we know so much about what we need to do to move forward. So the real question is, should we be waiting abstractly for something or someone else to fulfill us? Or would we find that fulfillment of our hopes in making the effort, in taking responsibility, in doing? We may not know it all, but there's a lot that we know that we could be doing and should be doing if we want to pull ourselves out of those times of despair that all of us share from time to time. So why aren't we doing it right now? That's a consideration. One, we'll call it an aphorism. We don't know if that's what it is. It's a saying that we've known for many years. A successful life is not measured by heights attained, but by obstacles overcome. We know a lot about our obstacles. We know a lot of things we can do to overcome those obstacles. So let's consider putting causes in motion, and with hope, with effort, we'll see fulfillment of purpose come about. So those are the ideas that we're in consideration for today. Maybe we can open the floor and find, you know, kind of together tease out some of these more ideas to make it as practical as possible. Any contributions? Yes.
Well, it seems to be in terms of our consciousness, what we're aware of. And it seems that also that what you're saying is that we are creating the world in which we are going to live in. We've created this world that we live in now, so that we're utterly and totally responsible, and that by knowing this, we are not living just one life, but we're living for all of our lives, for that continuum. So it's said that things just don't happen. It's falling like on a line until it appears. So if it doesn't appear in this life, it'll appear in the next. So all our good efforts and our brotherliness and so forth, how we strive to make it a better world, is that where we should begin? Is that a foundation for change?
So we're talking about, with consideration to reincarnation, with consideration to, there is so much built up within our nature that we don't know and see that really could come through at any time. Is that something that we should burden ourselves with, or should we kind of break it down and look at the day and work our best with what we have? The great challenges that come to us are much more manageable when we're moving forward. We know a friend who traveled in a military boat back in the 1950s to Japan. And as soon as they pulled into the harbor in this huge, huge army transportation vessel, they were ordered to turn around and head straight out to sea because there was a tidal wave coming in. And the only way that this vessel would survive the tidal wave is to hit it head on. Which can serve as an analogy. If we're unaware, if we're in despair sitting in our bedroom, mad at the world, and more problems come, are we prepared? Are we in motion already? Or are we able to deal with these problems? As opposed to really actively living our lives and maybe, you know, making lemon out of lemonade. It's easier to make that lemon out of lemonade if we're active about it. Yes.
And to go along with that too, we all know people where it just seems like it's one thing after another, yet they're meeting those challenges, and Mr. Judge calls them opportunities. And they're meeting these opportunities, you know, with you know, a good humor. They're accepting, you know, they look at the solution, not the problem. And then there's others where they could be getting the same kinds of things, and they're grumpy, they poor me, poor me. So we think that some of the way that we are meeting these challenges is karmic in nature. It's what our personality, we know it works on three planes. So this is one of the ways that we can be aware. And if we realize we are looking at our issues negatively, that if we know about karma and reincarnation, then we have the choice to change how we are going to meet these challenges that are coming to us. So karma, we think, might be a foundation piece here, knowing that we can change our attitudes, even if we can't change what's happening.
So thank you. So of course, attitude plays into dealing with our challenges in life, into setting those causes up. But of course, those causes, or rather those effects, as you know, if they come tumbling down on one person more so than another, in many ways that can simply mean that nature recognizes the strong character of that individual, and it's a wonderful opportunity in that lifetime to clean out some of the stuff. And who knows when that work is done in this lifetime, reincarnating into the next, it's entirely reasonable to say, if one consciously makes the effort to live by higher principles, that he will be challenged in greater ways by nature and be given the opportunities to burn more often. That'll just free him up in the future to be of greater service and to be of, or perhaps having grown from those experiences, be ready to have even more challenges come on, because we all have a lot of karma coming our way, and I know that we know that that's this talk for next week. But we always, of course, have to bear in mind when we talk about reincarnation, we have to always talk about karma, or it just doesn't make sense. Yes.
Well, recalling some of the slang words that we hear every day as we're growing up, we pay no attention to them. But we've often heard, take it easy when you're facing the music. Take it easy. Well, what does that mean? How can you take it easy?
Well, yeah, you know, if a wise person says something like this, and a wise older grandfather to his grandson or granddaughter sees them caught up in the moment, all he's saying is that he knows that they're allowing their emotional reaction to dictate their response to the situation rather than standing back. The wise way to approach men, you know, these problems is to impersonalize it. Okay, I have another one. Does that define me? No. I am who I am. I accept this. It's mine. Now, what do we need to do to fix the situation? And then don't get all upset. Using something other than reincarnation and one's own inherent power, the recognition of it, as a basis for hope. If we use something other than that, then we don't know if it's going to go away. We don't know if it's going to get cleared until somebody or someone else fixes it. So consider, yes.
In the Bhagavad Gita, there's that teaching, the embodied soul is gifted with faith. And we were wondering if the same thing could be said of hope, that the embodied soul is gifted with hope. If so, then it must come under the influence of the three qualities. Could we understand how the qualities, three qualities, can influence how we hope, and if there's a hope that transcends the qualities?
Well, the quality of Tamas, of darkness and of indifference, would apply to one who has lost hope, as we say. It would apply to one who is doing nothing about their challenging situation and waiting for it to go away, or waiting for someone or something else to fix it. That's just simply heedlessness, and not, yeah, just heedlessness per se. That would be of the quality of Tamas. Now, the quality of Rajas is different. Recognizing that there's an issue, whatever one's foundation for hope is, the quality of Tamas, which is grounded in action, would be to someone who uses superstition as their basis for hope, would be to pray more, to get going. And a lot of folks know, well, at least they have the feeling, well, you know what, God helps those who help themselves, so they're getting going on it. But taking action, or to the individual who takes a more theosophical approach and sees it as an impersonal issue, just take responsibility, but take action. So hope, so that would be a rajasic approach to hope, or hope as the quality of Tamas, or of Rajas. And then the third approach would be more of a sattvic approach to hope, where one perhaps would live their lives with the hope of something great and wonderful that will happen, and puts a lot of energy into it, and they're attached to the beauty of it. But if there's not some kind of rajasic quality together with the sattvic to make this greater world happen, then all they're really doing is building up their energy within their own mind, and it creates for a wonderful long devakan, if that's what you're looking for. But being sattvic and not taking action to make it happen in certain ways is unproductive as the tamasic approach. Now, this is just one student's ideas on this. Please, let's stick with this. Yes, please.
We were wondering, with the Tamas quality, we know that there's a duality in everything. So we know that there's a higher and a lower idea of all the three qualities. And we're wondering, with Tamas, the higher idea of it, I mean, we know Tamas is like, you know, it's we look at it, the higher quality, as being the foundation. It's steady, It's solid, it doesn't move, but it's there and it's strong. And we all need a solid foundation. So we were wondering in regards to Thomas.
So how could we look at that from a more positive perspective?
Yes.
How could we see hope? How do we see the quality of Thomas in hope as a positive perspective? Well, using one's judgment as to what to hope for, even if you're not acting on it, that might be an example. You know, hoping for things in the physical world that simply are not consistent with the physical laws of the universe is a Thomasic use of hope. Right? Yes, follow up.
And it enables one to be steady and pointed and not change their mind, not go here, there, and everywhere, but just be solid and stay in one spot and hold on to that hope and not give it up, just be there with it.
Thank you for the contribution. Others? Yes?
It seems then that the hope that transcends the qualities, that's not attached to the qualities, is that hope that's based on knowledge on who we are as souls and knowledge of the laws of nature regarding soul and evolution. It's beyond the qualities of knowledge.
So that hope, which is associated with knowing ourselves in perfect operation of the law, that would be the kind of hope that is beyond the qualities. Thank you. Yes.
But we all live in this world, and we find hope expressed in the seasons of the year, you know, because of the change, and we live in a world of change, and it goes from, you know, the dead of winter, when everything is still and dark, and to spring, summer, and then fall, where we are now. It's sort of, there's something in us that knows, that's hopeful, that we're part of this cycle. And because being so materialistic, one has to step out of the material conception of this rebirth into a more metaphysical one.
So then hope associated with recognizing natural processes in nature, these seemingly eternal processes, such as the changing of the seasons, if we see ourselves in those processes being a microcosm of it, then isn't that part of the foundation for hope? Because that just speaks to the cycle of life that we're living and reincarnating through. Thank you. Yes.
So, in reincarnation, and you throw karma into it, you should, when you have these opportunities come down the road that you have to face, if you turtle up and you don't go at them, and it doesn't spur you into some kind of action, that will affect your reincarnation. In other words, like I've heard people say that it's going to happen to you anyway, so the way you react doesn't really matter. You know, but it does mean how you react to it. That has a lot to do with it. And in a weird way, I guess the karma and the reincarnation kind of takes the pressure off, because when inexplicable things are coming down the road and hitting you in the head, you don't have to shake your fist at an outside God as much as it's something you have to go through. So that's kind of freeing, that part of it. But our reaction does mean something. I understand what I'm listening to.
Well, sure. Well, instead of shaking our fist at this external being that created us and either likes us or doesn't based on who we are and how we act, if we take responsibility for it, so there's a couple things here. If we turtle up, if we take responsibility for it and are successful, if we take responsibilities and are partially successful, maybe we didn't give it our all. Well, if we take responsibility for that karmic challenge and are successful, let's define successful is that we learned the lesson we were supposed to learn. Well, it's entirely possible that that could have been the 1,000th time that that lesson came to us in many lifetimes. So when we grow in wisdom and learn the lesson, that's done. If we make the effort and don't completely grow or learn everything yet, well, we've moved forward. So next time it comes back, we're all the more ready for it. That's probably a little closer to most of the time what happens. But as was said, if we turtle up and it goes right over us, well, that could have been an opportunity to clear up in this lifetime a karmic lesson that has beleaguered us for so long. And now it may not come back to us for another 5 lifetimes. And whatever we would have learned from it, we can't take that wisdom forward with us in the next 4 lifetimes until we do learn. So this idea of living consciously, mindfully, reflectively, questioning our own motives has to do with how am I going to handle problems of the day for the good of all. Nice. And that's all about reincarnation and karma.
Yeah, but why would you want to quicken your karma? Why would you want to bring it forward and not turtle up?
Well, plenty of folks don't want to quicken their karma. And by doing so, live miserable lives for longer amounts of time. Why would anyone want to have more problems quicker? Well, if we do view this world through the eyes of the ancient wisdom, then eventually we will come across that notion in the third fundamental that we are fundamentally identical with the Oversoul of the universe. That is who we are. Everything else that distracts us from that was put in motion by ourselves, and we lose focus or lose awareness of our true identity. So why would someone bring on all this karma? Well, once one recognizes this truth that we are identical, or even if they want to test it and check it to see if it's true, is it worth heading in that direction? We have to clean out a lot of stuff. There's a lot of things that we have to work on. Such as, you know, we say nicely, you know, put the superstition aside. But really, by putting the superstition aside, that can mean to some people turning my back on the religion of the past 10 generations of my family. And that's a big deal. Well, guess what? Theosophy doesn't dictate that. Theosophy doesn't say turn away from your religion. But if that's your karma with your family, look into your religion through or with the light of theosophical principles, and you'll find how much theosophy is in that religion, and maybe share theosophy using the words, the symbols, the rituals of that religion. You can share theosophy to help people see the truth behind the symbol rather than unfortunately accepting this symbol in ignorance. So many people accept the symbol as the truth. The symbol's not the truth. The theosophist looks to the truth within the symbol of why the symbol is even there. So, okay, we'll just leave it at that. We did mean to carry on. Yeah.
There's a number of examples given of how reincarnation is a foundation of hope for the average human being or the human being that consistently tries to do good. But it occurs to us that even for the quote sinner, the one who can't help themselves but do anything but the wrong or evil thing, I mean, reincarnation is a foundation for hope for them too. How is that?
So how can reincarnation be a hope for one who's leading more or less an evil life? Well, you know, there's more good in the worst of us and more bad in the best of us than any of us know. So who are any of us to judge the rest of us? So in the life of that sinner, there's also lifetimes of living by principle. And so that's all part of his karma as well, whether he knows it or not. Now, we're told that we never receive more challenges than our character can deal with. That doesn't mean we deal with all the characters in any one lifetime. Well, it doesn't mean we deal with all the problems in any one lifetime. But as Mr. Judge says, death sometimes comes as a friend, and some evil people die as a result of their own vices and problems. And that can be a blessing, because karmically, it could be time for him to be born into a new family who will bring him in and teach him certain principles, raise the child in certain ways to open up avenues for that karma to come through. We know a little girl who was who came to understand reincarnation, and this is back in the early 2000s. She's about 5 years old, and her application of that was exactly this. And she said that when they found Saddam Hussein in that hole, she said, well, when he dies, he's not going to go to hell. He's just going to be born into a family that's going to teach him right from wrong, such as karma and reincarnation. Yes?
It's interesting. The beginning of the lecture was talking about when you're trying to discuss these ideas with others, that the answer we would always get regarding reincarnation is, I don't want to deal with this anymore. I just want, when I die, I just want this to be over with and not have to worry about it. And to add that to the idea of somebody who, an evil person, you know, where's the doctrine of hope for them? Well, they're going to get another chance anyway, even if they don't realize it. So there is a doctrine of hope for that person. They'll come back. They have to pay for their deed.
Sure, but they may come back into a family that will
teach them right,
and prepare them better, perhaps.
So,
but what was the earlier part of that comment we thought?
About when you're sharing these ideas with somebody else and they say, oh, I don't want to come back.
Sure.
Again.
There's too much thought going on in there. You know, I don't have the time. Well, so nevertheless, it's worth the effort to challenge false ideas about God and to invite them to consider, really, are there universal laws working which will lead us down a path of having a happier, more fulfilled life. Nobody has to believe in reincarnation, accepted or not, but we help people by helping them at least remove false ideas. Yes, there was a hand here.
The discussion about making lemonade out of lemon shows the importance of us taking responsibility when we're presented with something that needs to be better. So what is the, how does reincarnation offer more hope than a limited lifespan, in the sense that the person looking at the glass of lemon can say, oh, I've got 30 more years, I better pay attention and fix this. That seems to me, that's a motivation, maybe out of fear or maybe out of a sense of limited time, but that's also a motivation for taking responsibility.
So the individual who doesn't accept or doesn't know about reincarnation, that doesn't mean that they're going to avoid their responsibilities, by no means, right? In fact, the church, one of the church's arguments against reincarnation is that if we teach the people reincarnation, then they'll become more irresponsible and not worry about fixing their problems because they'll be back in another life and then they'll get the opportunity. Well, if we teach reincarnation and understanding working with the law, reincarnation and karma, then it takes a completely different tack. Because then not only if one decides not to fix this and no, one knows that it's there, not will you only have the karma still there that you have to fix that, but there's the karma of the lethargy. So it's almost like interest on your karma that's growing for deliberately avoiding it, right? So yes, for those who don't believe in reincarnation, we would not say that they are devoid of a sense of urgency to do the right thing. However, we can say for those who do not accept or not know about reincarnation, introducing the idea to them can be a real help if they apply it, and of course to each his own. It's our job to share the ideas, not to evangelize. Yes.
Well, it was our understanding that when we volunteer to help, there's a word point out the way. You'd be surprised. And volunteering to explain these ideas and so forth, we, unknown to ourselves, may save lives, wherein it may be multiple lives in the future before we ourselves grasp what we have been doing, helping nature, pointing out the way. And the thing that the idea here is that if it helps someone else see, that's the most important thing, more so than our attempts to explain, which can be, you know, terrible. But the idea here is that in the audience, there may be one or two who only need one or two more steps before they are miles ahead of us.
So right, so the contribution here is when we, as students, fulfill that part of the opportunity to share true ideas or to correct false ideas, we're not doing it per se to speak with authority to influence someone against their will. We give it out, we share the idea, and we let it go. Now, without being attached to the effect. It's not for us to determine whether or not this person has learned enough about theosophy yet, right? But just to share the ideas. Because that individual who knows the domino effect as this individual interacts with other people just with that idea, but also who knows the domino effect, let's forget the physical linear stuff, who knows the domino effect that by more people thinking this idea here and now on the plane of thought, it is not limited to this focus. Effects can happen elsewhere in the world just because other people's minds are open to it and they receive it as though they were antennas. So we never know, but it's all based in the motive and the effort we put forth. There's a follow-up, yeah.
Well, there's another phrase, I'll think about that. And as we try to point out the way to others, it may strike a bell with them before it strikes a bell with you.
They may understand it in much deeper ways than
that's
we do.
Right, so the idea of participating, there's a mutuality developed, and oh, where did I hear that before?
Right. Thank you. Yes.
It was pointed out that reincarnation has to be considered with karma, but we also think it has to be considered with evolution, because even the one who at the end of their lives says they've lived a good life also knows that they could have done better. They had more time, better opportunities, better instrument, they could always have done better. So reincarnation there is not just hope for the good, it's hope for the better. And it's important to remember that.
So the idea here is at the end of our lives, during those after-death states, all the good that we've done, the highest aspirations and hopes and experiences that we have perceived, all of those which are worthy of being assimilated into our immortal soul, the higher ego, all of that, our experiences are the substance of that soul. So the more we put forth in any one life, the more we assimilate. And so the degree to which our character grows really is directly related to the degree that we are of greater service in trying to help other people. The growth of the character, we can use the word character with a capital C as meaning the same thing as the spiritual soul. The growth of character is the growth of the spiritual soul. So our experiences that we assimilate that are worthy of assimilating, we come back into that next life with yet a stronger character, a more edified ability to deal with situations. And that's the whole process of evolution of the individual. Eventually it comes to the more fuller realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood, which simply means I'm starting to see the he in me really is the he in thee. The universal brotherhood part is the interconnectedness, the infinite interconnectedness of all life. Yeah.
It said that this is an eternal wisdom, so that our hope then is that if we study it in this life, we will study it in another life. That this truths attract us back again and again and again, and among the same kind of people. So in one sense we're hopeful for the future, but we also know that we have known everyone from the past that we are associated with.
Well, this touches on that aspect of reincarnation where it's not just an individual thing. Families reincarnate together. Societies reincarnate together. Nations reincarnate together. We reincarnate with those who, in the scheme of things, we are best able to serve and grow together as. Now, that doesn't mean that we always come back with the same group. There may be other opportunities elsewhere. But yeah, so here we are studying these ideas. Someone who's walks in the door, who just clicks with it, probably has studied these ideas in a previous life. And probably we have been together in that process. It could have been in Plato's Academy. It could have been in 1875 in New York City. It could have been in any of the mystery schools through the ancient civilizations where these ideas are always taught. Was there a hand here? So we, there's a particular sentence here, a brief paragraph that, so this is the voice of the silence, and HPB studied in Tibet for a certain amount of time and learned from the ancient teachings of Tibet there. Now, we're just saying this because that from which the voice of the silence comes is that same doctrine from which the secret doctrine comes. These are more just along the lines of sutras or aphorisms, but also it's a complete book in itself. So regarding this, the message here is help nature and work on with her, and nature will regard thee as one of her creators, and she will make obeisance. Work with nature. So we have a meeting in the Ocean of Theosophy on Wednesday. We invite you back to next Sunday. It will be on karma. We forget exactly the title, but it's very interrelated with this talk. So they'll be picking up in certain ideas, and our meeting is adjourned.